Hello, and welcome to Mike M's Weekly Reads, Episode 1. I always do rankings of what I read during the week. And I said, why not just record a 5-minute, 10-minute episode every week and release it on the Greek Brunch feed? So that's what this is going to be. It's going to be random thoughts from me. And I usually post the list of what I read on Geek Brunch on Facebook, and I never really talk about them. I just post them. I kind of show some screenshots on Facebook. But I thought, what the hell? Last week I didn't read a lot, which was weird because it was a holiday weekend, but did a lot of different things. And Monday, all books went into this next coming week. So this is the week ending that began on 8/31 and ran for 1 week, and then I'll be releasing another one really soon. But I want to start at the bottom of what I read. I read a total of 29 books. I really should be reading about 50 a week to keep caught up, but I don't always keep caught up. There's life gets in the way. Do a lot of different fun stuff. Work sometimes late. Don't get a chance to read. And then I've been exercising, so it takes away time from reading because I usually get on the elliptical and watch some TV. And right now I'm watching Daredevil, which is really cool. But we had a total of 29 books. We had two from Boom, one from Charlton. Yep, that's right, Charlton. And it was a new release, so I'll tell you about that. Dark Horse 1, DC 7, IDW 1, Image 2, Jet City Comics 2, Marvel 7, Valiant 6. So there's kind of a good distribution for the week as far as publications. I'll start at the bottom. The first one my ratings are like Netflix ratings. I don't like to like do the points or like 2.5 out of 5 or 2.7. I like to just have what Netflix does, which is a very fine definition, and it's very broad, but it's real fine. But it makes sense. One is I hated it. Two is I did not like it. Three is I like it. Four is I really like it. And five is I love it. And I tend to usually put everything in fives, fours, and threes, but I did have a two. And the first one, I'm going to go from twos up to, you know, so rank 2 out of 5 was America Town from Boom Studios. It's a very weird rating from Boom. Usually Booms are 4 or 5, you know, 5 books for me, you know, 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5. And I thought I was going to like this one. This is like a Boom Arcania publication, and it was done by two movie guys. And the concept was really cool. It's like post-apocalyptic. What if people were trying to escape America, because America, instead of trying, you know how you have now immigration laws and all this stuff, people trying to get into America? Well, what if in the future it flipped and people were trying to get out of America into other countries because America was messed up? That is a cool concept because it looks at things in an inverted way. And the concept is really cool, and it focuses on this older man who's trying to get back to his family in Brazil. And that's all cool. And the art was competent. The story was choppy. That's what was hard. It kept on moving back and forth. I couldn't get a good grasp of the characters or so I could care about them or know where the book was going. It just kept jumping around a little bit too much for me. But the concept was so solid that I'm sticking with it. And I just received issue 2, and I think it's going to be a lot better. I really think once they get the ground running on this book, they chose to go with a route like usually what I like is they either make the characters so intriguing that you don't care about the story, this the kind of stories I like, or you have such a strong story that, you know, the characters are in the background and you're just following the plot. I like ones that are a good combination of both, but I like stories in both that. And this one, it didn't seem to establish itself in either way or in both categories. So it was kind of a little bit of a disappointment for me personally. I don't often read reviews like blog reviews, but the one thing I find myself doing is not reading blog reviews for what I love, because I don't want anybody to change the way I feel about a book, or like if I really enjoyed it, I don't want anybody to make me. But if there's something I didn't enjoy, I often like to read stuff because I'm like, well, why didn't I enjoy it? Is there something I missed in the plot that I need to figure out to make me enjoy the story more? So I often read posts, and there was a lot of reviews. There was a couple of people that loved it, and there was a couple of people that felt exactly the way I did. And there was a couple of insight things, like on the solicitations, like when they do interviews before a book come out, that was interesting because it helped me understand the book a little bit better. So I think I'm gonna like it going forward. So that was America Town. I gave it a 2 out of 5, but I think it's gonna get into the threes very soon. And then we jump into the 3 out of 5, and we're going from bottom to top. We have DC Comics Presents Bombshells. This one I did enjoy. It was three stories, very short stories. They're digital first stories, and it kind of introduces you to the characters in this world, which is World War II, when all the men are off to war and the women are staying back and doing all the work, keeping the country running, keeping the factories going, taking over sports like a league of their own, that kind of thing. And I really, really did enjoy the Batwoman story, which was kind of like a thing of the league of their own. She got like a Batwoman, and she was actually batting and playing, baseball. I really did enjoy it. I thought that was my favorite. The Wonder Woman story was solid, but it was not too different from what is already out there, as far as origins of Wonder Woman. And then the Supergirl story was really different. It was a Russian-centric. She had landed in Russian, like Superman Red Son. So, but it's in the 40s. So, I imagine this book is going to get really intriguing when worlds collide. Like these are origin stories, but they're gonna somehow join in a world. I love the time period of the 40s. So, I think this book is just going to rise up for me and get better as soon as the origins are told. So many interesting things to talk about. I do buy all the statues. I think the DC Bombshells is the statues are phenomenal. They're amazing. I can't describe how much I enjoy seeing them. I don't have any place to put them right now. So what I'm gonna have to do is take out my CoverGirl statues out of the case. Put them in storage in the basement for a while so I could display all of the Bombshell statues. The next one is a little bit shocking that I gave a 3 out of 5 because I thought it would be a 4 out of 5. This is a Paul Cornell book, This Damn Band. And this is also a book I think is going to get better and better for me as time goes on. This is from Dark Horse Publications. It's the story of a 70s rock band, and they've been around since the late 50s and the 60s. And in the back of the book, they do a really good job of showing like the progression of their rock. Like it almost looked like a Rolling Stone type layout. The 50s they did this, and the 60s they did this, and the 70s they're doing this. And one thing is that they're a band that is like a typical 70s bands. They're high into drugs. They're very diverse. They look very different. One of the bass players wears a purple suit. And then you have the drummer, and then the two guitar players, and the singer. And the singer looks like a Led Zeppelin singer, or somebody out of that, or like Roger Daltrey singing. He even kind of dresses like you would imagine them to dress in the 70s. But it's an interesting concept. The art was really good. It's weird too because they have like a harem that moves with them, and some of these guys are married, and their wives don't care that they fuck other women or they're doing drugs. And one guy has his kids coming along with them on the tours and shit like that. And one time they go to China and they decide to do like mushroom drugs. It's insane. It's a really good book. I think this one got a 3 out of 5 because of when I read it. I read it at night, really late, and I really needed to sit on it and think about it. And when I'm really tired, I tend to enjoy books like Mickey Mouse and lighthearted stuff like All Star Section 8 or Zombie Tramp or something like that, where I don't have to think much. But I think this book is going to move up in the charts for me. But that was This Damn Band from Dark Horse. The next one is from Jet City Publications. It's an Amazon publication, and they tend to be adapting things for books and stuff like that, you know, the digital books that they're putting out and stuff like that. And this is Mirrorwood. Mirrorwood. And this first offering is kind of like in a realm that is not my favorite. It's in the fantasy genre, and I've been historically known to not like fantasy. There's some exceptions to the rule. A lot of the fantasy stuff in CrossGen I absolutely loved, and this Mirrorwood got a 3 out of 5, but it has a lot of potential. I think it focused too much on the main character, who's a princess that was learning. You're not supposed to learn to read, because you learn to read and it leads you to the dark arts and you learn magic, and magic has been banned from the kingdom. But the kingdom is going to shit, and the king sends away for his princess, who's he's pretty much put in a prison outside the city, and he sends his knights to go get her and bring her back because he has a mission for her. And she doesn't necessarily know if she wants to do this because she knows her father is not good to her, wasn't good to her mother, but it looks like she's going to take the mission. And what's strong about this book is the characterization. You get to like the princess. You get to know a lot about the princess. You get to like know that the king is not a good man. He's almost like that asshole king in Dragon Slayer, if you've seen the movie. But it just had too much inner dialogue for me, and it was so slow paced, and there wasn't very much action. And it had some strange stuff with the kid at the end, where she rescued it from a blind bully, which is really weird. Is this guy was this kid was blind, and he was picking on another kid, like he was gonna kill him, and she ended up rescuing him, and she realized that the king had said some other knight to follow her. And it looks like that's going to be one of the characters that's a big time player in this book. But that's from Jet City Comics. I gave it 3 out of 5. I would recommend all of the 3 out of 5s. I would even recommend the 2 out of 5 because I think the plot is strong. But I'm a very different reader than a lot of people. So, you know, things are going to vary. You might read America Town and think it's the best, and that's cool. Everybody's different. So now we go into the 4 out of 5s, and there is a lot of 4 out of 5s. So I'm gonna go from bottom to top, and at the top is what I liked the best out of in the 4 out of 5s, and at the bottom is what I liked the least in the 4 out of 5s. But 4 out of 5 is I really, really like the book. I really like it. So we had Ivar Timewalker, number 8. This was a solid story. It kind of moves the needle on the plot a little bit. I just think that the second story arc with the brothers, Ivar and Galad and Armstrong, is just kind of not as good as you think. You get the three brothers together and it's going to be amazing, but it didn't work for me like the first arc. The first arc of Timewalker, I really, really did enjoy it. Like, I was so into it. And I like the time, the historical jumps, and they have Amelia Earhart in this, which is kind of cool. She's like flying the spaceship. And they have this one villain that they defeated in the last book that turns out that they're using him in this other book. And it is a decent read. It's entertaining. I guess I'm just disappointed with the brothers' interaction with each other. They are pulled out of different times. Like Galad is from an older version of Galad. His voice doesn't seem very seasoned as like an eternal warrior that I'm used to. But Armstrong does have the sense of humor that he normally has, and you know Fred Van Lente has written a lot of Armstrong, so that one fits pretty well. And then Ivar's voice is pretty good, and also the female character, who's also the female villain in the book, her future self, who's trying to destroy all of time and end it. And we don't know how she got to that point, but it's interesting. The Batman Arkham Knight story was cool. It was the second part with featuring the Suicide Squad. There was a, this is the video based on the video game, so it's not in DC continuity, but it's highly entertaining. And it had Harlequin, it had Captain Boomerang, and Deadshot. Deadshot is one of my favorite characters of all time. So is Captain Boomerang. Absolutely love those characters. And there's a scene in here which I was shocked to see, where one turns on the other, and it's kind of a big deal. But they were hired to kill Bruce Wayne, and Bruce Wayne doesn't show up in the book because he's Batman, and Batman ends up fighting him. It's a really high-paced book. I enjoy it. The last one was my favorite. Well, actually, the Suicide Squad was part. The last one had part one, and this was part two. But it also had a just a standalone story about somebody that was living in the slums, and that standalone story is fucking awesome. It was a 5 out of 5, but that was last. It wasn't this week's. So that was Batman Arkham Knight number 8 from DC Comics. The next one we had going up the list of fours is Flash Season 0, and this series is really, really good if you enjoy the TV show, because it gives you so much backstory on the characters like Caitlin. The last few issues have really developed Caitlin Snow, and I've really enjoyed where that's going. And this one had to do with her going up against one of her old mentors who's supposedly dead, but not dead. And it doesn't even feature the Flash. It's mostly a Caitlin Snow story and a Cisco story, and I really love those supporting cast, and I loved what this series is doing, and this was the finale. I don't think there's going to be another Flash Season 0 unless the series comes out and they decide to relaunch and it was digital first. It doesn't sell that well, but I don't know how it sells digitally, so maybe it does decent. I would like to see it come back. I especially like these books when the series is down, because it fills the gap for when the series is not being shown, and I miss Arrow, and I miss Flash. So that is a good book. Green Lantern 44. This book is improving. It really is for me, because I haven't been a huge fan of. I don't get me wrong. This is a 4 out of 5. I enjoy reading Green Lantern. It's just that they have turned Hal Jordan in a character that I don't think is very heroic and makes so many mistakes. It's okay to be heroic and make mistakes and learn from them, but he is, in the New 52, he is the dumbest Green Lantern. Some people will argue with me, but I could point to several things in the stories where, Jon Stewart or Guy or Kyle would have done the right, the better choice, and he just did some stupid shit. But having said that, it is improving. He's kind of like Renegade Green Lantern. He's trying to find the Green Lantern Corps because they're missing, and they're appearing in another book called Green Lantern Lost Corps or something like that. And they have a lot of weird shit going on in that book because they have Kronos appearing, and they have other characters appearing in different time frames, and you don't know what's really happening to them. But it's a really good story. I'm really enjoying that story as it progresses, more so than Green Lantern, personally. But my favorite Lantern book is definitely Sinestro by Cullen Bunn. That one is just rocking every time, solid. But this Green Lantern story was pretty solid, and I enjoy where it's going, and where it might end up. And he seems to be doing pretty good as a renegade, like on his own. At least they did like artistically decide to make him look younger, though, and it looks bizarre. Continuity-wise, DC, it's hard for me to tell what DC is doing because you got Superman in the Justice League books, and he's not the depowered Superman. You got Batman, who's Bruce Wayne in the Justice League books, but he's not Commissioner Gordon. And then you got to top that off, you have Superman in action, and action's taking place in the now time, and Superman's taking place in the past. And then you're going to have Superman Loves Lois Clint Clark book coming out, which is going to be phenomenal with Dan Jurgens. And God, I can't remember who the artist is. Lee Weeks. That's gonna be fucking hot. But it's in another continuity. So continuity-wise, DC's kind of just saying, let's tell some good stories. But you have to go into these books with the mindset that you can make up your own continuity. Like in the Justice League book, I say, oh, this is happening in the past, prior to the Action Comics and Batman comics right now. That's what my brain decides to do with them. But it's all in continuity in my brain, and I absorb it like it's in continuity in my brain. And even the Marvel books in Battle World, they to me are in continuity. It led from stories that were in continuity to a situation where Doom was president of the whole world. He's the god of Battle World, and it's going to progress from Battle World dissipating and creating like a new Earth. That is history. That's continuity. That's getting from point A to point B. A lot of people say that's not. I disagree. I believe it is. And what I have written, I like to know. I like to know everything. That's just the way I am. It's history. And I have to say the I am really behind in Battleworld. But what I have read, I have loved, like Korvac and 1872. I just those books are so fucking good. Thor's, those are all great books. The next book I ranked was Invincible 144, 114, sorry. And Invincible, I started getting around the controversial issue where he was actually raped. You don't usually see a male superhero raped in comics, and I was curious to see what this is and kind of like a good jumping on point. And I was reading Invincible Universe at the time, so I thought maybe this is a good point to join. And it turned out to be a very good jumping on point. Invincible Universe had given me a lot of the characters that were in his world, so I was able to jump right in and know who a lot of the characters were. And I have enjoyed this series. One of the heroes turns villain, and he's kind of going after him, and his father doesn't want him to. And his girlfriend has had a baby. They've had a baby, and she was brutalized, like lost her limbs and stuff like that, to this new villain. And this new villain is trying to tell Invincible that everything's copacetic and that he's doing it for the greater good. And Invincible's like, fuck that, man. You don't do this to your friends and stuff just for the greater good. But it's a fun book, and I highly recommend it for people that enjoy superheroes. And I really do think there's going to be another jumping on point in the near future. But I think you can jump on like with 111 or 110 and really start digging the story. So we got Detective Comics 44. This story was really cool, especially if you love Harvey Bullock. You get a lot of good characterization of Harvey in this book. Batman's kind of in the background, doing some fighting scenes. The book is mostly a Harvey Bullock comic, with one of his previous partners betrays the police force, and he still wants to help her. And it was a very cool story. I really dug it. I like where it's going. It feels like a Gotham Central book, and I like the fact that he's partnered with Renee Montoya. I love that they're bringing that back together. I love that it focuses on the cops. I love how Commissioner Gordon's kind of in the story as Commissioner Gordon, but when he's Batman, he's kind of in the background because we got Batman for that in other books. So yeah, Detective is really hitting it on all cylinders for me. And I'm enjoying it quite a bit. The next one I read, oh, I that's weird. I didn't take credit for Wild Blue Yonder. I read Wild B Blue Yonder number. Let's see, I did something wrong. I'm trying to figure it out what I did. I read 4 through 6 of Wild B Blue Yonder, and I put Wild Blue Yonder number 1, which is totally incorrect. So I actually read more books than 29. On IDW, I should have had 3 instead of 1, and that would have taken me to 31 titles. So I fucked that up. But it's a good thing I do this podcast so I can correct it in my little document, because I keep track of all the books I read. So Wild Blue Yonder is like the road warrior in the air. Earth is on fire. Everybody's fighting for airspace and fuel to keep their ships in the air. And there's a relationship that was perturbed in the past. And you have the bad guy going after the one woman who's running the good guy ship for the most part. And you have the daughter who fell in love with a guy who was sent to betray them. And it's pretty cool because they have these guys that are like, you have a pilot, you have a couple of pilots that actually are like fighter pilots, and the one woman that runs the let's say the Rebel Alliance is has a daughter, and she's their pilot, and she's like their number one fighter pilot. And then they have a couple of guys, like they're like rocketeers, and their job is to go on to other platforms and just use axes and shit and destroy stuff. And they're pretty like the bravest soldiers. And her boyfriend, or the guy she fell in love with, who actually betrayed them but didn't betray them, turns out he might have died trying to do the right thing at the very end, even though he had betrayed him. And this is a cool, like, if you love Mad Max, if you like Road Warrior, you will dig Wild Blue Yonder from IDW, and I highly recommend it. It's post-apocalyptic. I tend to navigate towards that, and I think you will too. The next one I had was right before Flashpoint. There was a title called War That Time Forgot, and it was based on a previous DC titled book, where they kind of put, it's kind of like a battle world scenario. They put in a bunch of warriors from different parts of the Earth on a world, and the aliens are watching them, how they interact with each other. Well, it turns these aliens, well, I don't want to get there because this is issue 7, and it features people like Viking Prince and Titus. They're Roman characters. Lieutenant Carson, who is from the series. You get a lot. Tomahawk, who is a Western hero. You get all the DC, these DC obscure characters in this book. It's really phenomenal, and I highly recommend it. You should really check it out. The art team was really solid. We had some Scott Collins, we had some Graham Nolan. God, I can't remember the other guy's name, but Bavaria or something like that. Let me see if I Barian Novo, who did most of the series. He was phenomenal. This was a Bruce Jones series. Highly recommend it for those who like the DC characters. This is number 7. It's a 12-issue series. I read the rest of it on the next week. I thought the title was so solid, and I'm so glad I read it. And I would like to see something like this come back. The art was so good, and I just love obscure characters that are in DC. I just love it. Next one up on the 4 out of 5s was Rye 8 and 9, and this one, man, was teetering on that. Like, should I put it in the 5? Should I put it in the 5? Because I read 8, which was the wrap up of the first series, and then I read 9, which is the beginning of the new series, and it was just so solid. I think I like 9 a little bit more than 8, and I like the way 8 wrapped up. You know, it was like the final battle between Rai and Father, and it resulted in something. And then that something took off in number nine, kind of using the backstory of the other character, the supporting cast, because let's just say Rai has fallen. And I really did enjoy it. I really love the artwork. I like this, the fact that they keep the same creative team. Matt Kent's writing works. You'll find that certain writers like work good in your brain, and all our brains are different. And, you'll hear sometimes when I read some writers, my brain just doesn't get the words. But when Mac Kent puts words on a page, my brain absorbs it and it's fluid. It's like I don't have to stop and think at all. It's just fluid. It's going through my brain. I'm processing it. I want more. I want more. I want more. Some writers I have to think about, and my brain has to process it more, and I have to like. But this is like fluid. Matt Kent's writing is fluid in my brain. I really enjoy it. The next one was Ninjak 6. Which man, it's another one that's teetering on the 5 out of 5, because Ninjak 5 I also read this week or that past week, and it got a 5 out of 5. So Ninjak number 6, I know why it introduced one of the seven that he's going after, he's undercover with, and it was the bearded guy with powers that could scramble technology. And I know why I degraded this, and I'll tell you right now, it wasn't because of the story, it was because of the art. And the art is phenomenal. That's what's weird. It's just, I like this guy's art, like if he was doing something like Gotham Central or one of those detective, or if he was on, that Bat book that features the Spectre or something that was in that vein. But it didn't work well for me in Ninjak. And then when they did have the action sequences in it, it looked like a video game, and I didn't like that. But your mileage may vary. You might think that the art was an improvement from the previous team, but I think the story was very solid, because what each arc is doing now is he's going after the these villains. You had to go after Cannon first, and now this is the next character he's going after. And the next issue will be he's going after another character, and he's going to have to go through, it's like the seven trials of Hercules. He's going through these trials. And that is the only reason I degraded it. And that was a 4 out of 5. It was close to a 5 out of 5. But like 4 out of 5 is I really, really, really enjoyed it. It is almost I love it. Now this is, I thought this was going to be like 5 minutes. I ended up taking about 20 minutes. But the next one is Strange Fruit from Boom Studios. Absolutely beautiful book. I don't know when we'll see the next one, but it's by J.G. Jones, who you might know from Final Crisis. He's a writer, a co-writer. He's Mark Waid's assisting, and I would assume he's assisting, because sometimes artists don't transition well into writing or as fluid, and they need somebody to ground them. And maybe that's Mark Waid. I don't know. Maybe Mark Waid is getting the plot from J.G. Jones, and he's filling in the words. I don't know what the agreement is, but I know it's a phenomenal book. It's in a racist South, and near the Mississippi, and a lot of flood is going on, and the whites and the blacks are not getting along, but the blacks are starting to get some rights, and the whites need their help because there's a flood of the Mississippi River, and they're trying to coexist, and it's not working out too well. And the thing that is it's not, like, what if Superman was black and he landed in this racial time period? And it's really well done. I really thought the art was phenomenal. I thought the story was well paced and well written. And it almost is. This was my last 4 out of 5 book, and it could have been a 5 out of 5. So after that, we get into the 5 out of 5s. These are, I love it. And the first one that's in there was something that I thought was going to be a 2 out of 5 or a 3 out of 5 when I started it, but as I got, halfway through the book, I was like, I really, really enjoy this world. And I asked myself, why do I enjoy this? I don't know if anybody else would rate this a 5 out of 5. Me and Bill Bomer talked about it, and he didn't think it was as good as I did. Why do I think it was so good? And I will tell you why. And for those of you that know me, know I love Jack Kirby, and he had a book called Commandy. Well, this book reminded me of Commandy. Well, what if Commandy was the last boy on Earth, and every Earth was this weird post-apocalyptic world where gods were on the Earth, and society was all animals and other beings and aliens, and this guy was the last boy on Earth, but he had to exist in this world that tried to become a world like on Earth, where there were jobs and where there's things to do, but there was absolute chaos and craziness. And he had to just get to work one day, and he ran into some crazy shit with gods. He fought with a Cobra Kai teddy bear, like from Karate Kid, that was like 30 feet tall. It was just some ridiculous stuff, but the art was really good. The pacing of it was really good. It was also from Jet City Comics, which is that new publication. And the writer was Joshua Hale Falakoff, which I really do enjoy. And the art was Bernard Chang. And I was really pleased with it. It made me happy. And that's why I gave it a 5 out of 5. The next one was issues 1 through 7 of Star Wars Volume 1 from Marvel Comics. And the reason I gave this out of 5 out of 5 is because it made me feel young again. It made me feel like when I first saw the movie, and many months later after I saw the movie, I bought the Treasury Edition. And I read that like 1,000 times. So 1 through 6 was just a reproduction of the movie. Howard Chaykin was on art, and it was amazing. And it brought so many fond memories, and I'm really excited for what's going to be happening in the near future. And the inker on the early stuff was also somebody I actually met on a bus. God, I try to remember his name. Steve Lealoha. And I met him, and he was a really phenomenal guy. He inked on like issues 2 through 4, I believe, and then another inker took over. The inkers were really good. They were very different. Like, you'll notice the difference because the inkers changed quite a bit in 1 through 6. And the writer was Roy Thomas. You can't go wrong. The adaptation was very close to the movie, but there were some changes in it. Like Jabba was in it, and he was this weird alien. But God, I was so fond of this. I bought the omnibus, and that's how I read 1 through 7. 1 through issue 7 was all new to me. Never read it. It featured like what happened at the end of the movie. They got their, medallions, and Han Solo got his reward, and him and Chewie were going to back to pay Jabba. And it was a really cool adventure because they're almost, getting there. They know a bounty's on their head, and they run into a space pirate. And the space pirate looks like he came out of something out of like Legion of Superheroes. It was a really bad design. The pirate's right-hand man was like Mademoiselle Marie from GI Combat, but it was crazy fun. And they took all the reward money, and Han Solo was like up shit creek. He knew him and Chewie had to lay low. So, what system can we go to that we think we can lay low? Well, they go to this one system, and it was a bad idea to go to because it was this religious thing going on where this they had to protect this alien priest from this horde of aliens that were trying to kill him, and it was a really good plot. And at the end of it, they did get paid some money for protecting the priest and stuff, and they were going to a bar, and all hell breaks loose. They were gonna get laid. Han had a woman around. His Chewie had two alien women. He was gonna take them both on, and then they were interrupted before they could have sex. So yeah, issue 7 was great. A lot of reminiscing on Star Wars from Marvel Comics, and then we got into Justice League 43. Since Geoff Johns came back after, the Convergence, he's been doing this Darkseid thing where Darkseid's looking for his daughter, and you got the Anti-Monitor and all kinds of hell breaking loose. And you have heavy focus on Mr. Miracle and a lot of focus on the New Gods. And Batman's on the Mobius chair. And there's some crazy shit, and it's just fucking awesome. Fabric is on the art, Jason Fabric, and he's been one of my favorite artists. He usually draws Batman, and every time he knocks it out of the park. Now he's doing Justice League, and he's killing it. And one thing I like about it is, even though it's New 52, it doesn't feel like New 52. It's almost like if you took all that stuff that happened in Green Lantern, which featured all the new gods. It's like they're not even those same new gods though that they introduced in that arc. They're almost like pre-52 new gods, which is very interesting. And it's confusing too if you try to follow in continuity. But what I recommend on DC is just have fun and put it in your own continuity and you'll be happy. The next one is a surprise that I've been rating Robin, Son of Batman, probably in the 3 out of 5 since it started. Well, Robin, Son of Batman number 3, it turned it around for me. It became at a 5 out of 5. I absolutely loved it. His relationship with Nobody, what they have going on with Talia al Ghul. Oh my God. It just becoming such, it's such a fun book. I like Damian a lot as a character, and it's interesting to see him in a solo situation. And I love how he's bonding with Nobody's daughter. And the characterization drove this into a 5 out of 5. And I went from a th that's why I love comics. And that's why comics are great, is because it's a roller coaster ride. Sometimes you might think something one month is a 3 out of 5, and it's a 5 out of 5. And it's good to be along a roller coaster ride, in my opinion, than to be in a merry-go-round where it just circles and circles and circles and nothing changes. So yeah, Robin, Son of Batman, number 3, DC Comics. We're almost there, guys. Paul Cooperberg's Secret Romance number 1 from Charlton Comics. yeah, those that are close to me know I have a thing for romance comics. I get weird love from IDW. I buy a lot of DC, Charlton, and old romance comics. And from an historical perspective, they are fascinating, especially when you look at it. How women were treated back then. It was almost like they were really subservient to men and they had to do certain things, and it was just bizarre. It's nothing like it is today, but it's very interesting to read it from an historical perspective. And this story was really weird. It had a lot of it had it was like Tales from the Crypt done with romance tales. And the stories were, there was like 5 stories in it. One story was just words, because sometimes there were, in romance comics, they had prose. And I'll talk about that prose comic. The prose one was very, very disturbing and real. It was like this girl was beautiful, and she was doing, like, her friend was trying to set her up. And she finally went to a coffee shop to get into a relationship. And her friend said, "Yes, I've told this guy everything about you, blah, 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 blah. And he knows everything, so it shouldn't be a surprise when he comes to meet you." Well, from what I take is that she was a beautiful woman, because you don't get to see her. This is a prose part of a story. And she goes to the coffee shop, and she finally, they were supposed to carry in, I can't remember the novel, so they can see each other and know that they wouldn't be surprised, because they'd see each other holding this book. Man, I wish I remember what the book was. But this guy finally did walk in, and he smiled when he first saw her, and she smiled, and they both looked at each other, and it was like, man, this is going to be great, you know? And then she stood up, and she had a brace on her leg because she had cerebral palsy, and this is heartbreaking. And the guy just walked right out the door with the face of terror. And the sad part is, she kept thinking to herself, well, maybe that wasn't the guy. Maybe it's just coincidence that he brought the same book in, because my friend promised me that she told this guy about my disability. So if it was the same guy, why was he shocked to see that I have a brace on my leg? So I'm gonna sit here and drink my coffee and wait for the guy to show up. That's just fucking heartbreaking. That's fucking heartbreaking. And then what's weird about this romance stuff is, you go from a heartbreaking story into like something that's fucking ridiculous. The first story arc was about cops, and it's this female cop, not a very good looking female cop. She's on the bulky side, and she has a really fat ass, like Harvey Bullock partner, who's an asshole. They go from scene to scene, and this motherfucker takes credit for everything, and he doesn't do shit. They'll be driving along, and he'll just be mouthing off, saying, "Did I ever tell you about the time that I stopped this drug ring and blah, blah, blah?" And she's like, "This motherfucker is so full of shit. I need to take some water." But she absolutely hates this guy. She goes, "I've seen drug addicts. I've seen murders. And I'd rather be with those guys than with my fucking partner." She even goes to the captain, and she says, "Please, captain, I would be much happier if we trained partners. I really hate this guy." And he makes like a joke of it, and he's like, "You'll get over it. You'll be okay." And she says, "Do you know that this guy lies?" And the captain goes, "Well, you filled out the report. Does that mean that you're lying too?" And he kind of turns it on her, and she says, "I'll go back to being his partner." Well, then the story kind of twists, and she finds there's a gunfight, and she finds an unmarked gun, and she takes the gun and she puts it into her, jacket, and she's like, "I'm gonna use this gun for later, because maybe I can have an opportunity where I'm chasing somebody and he's fucking in the car, and I tell him to finally get out of the car and I could kill him. I'm gonna kill my fucking partner." And you're like, what the fuck's gonna happen? Well, they end up in a scene where they're together in an alley chasing some perp. And he's telling her how he had feelings for her, and how he only brags to her because he's trying to win her over, and she's like, "I hate this motherfucker." And then a perp comes across the alleyway, pulls out a gun, and he's gonna shoot them. And they both aim at the same time. They pull out of their holsters and shoot the guy. And then she's like, "You know what? I really love this motherfucker." And then they kiss and shit like that. And you're like, what the fuck just happened? That's funny romance comics. And that Paul Cooperberg has some great artists to support these books. A matter of fact, the one that did the prose story, there was a couple of art pieces, and I think, I'm not 100% sure that it is, but I think it's the guy that does the Fire and Water podcast, the Aquaman guy. He is an artist, and I think he did some of the art for that, which is really, really cool. So, highly recommend this. And then there was another story about this older couple. I would say they're in their 60s, and he's a judge, and he's like, I'm going to have to condemn this guy, even though I've known him all my life, and I'm going to have to do it because he's deviant and he's having an affair with another man. So it's like a gay story. And it's a weird story because they're talking about like deviant behavior. If you've ever taken a sociology class in college or something like that, you learn about like deviant behaviors and all this shit. And he's talking about how deviant being gay is. And then the irony of the whole situation is the wife is like, yeah, we gotta fix this, blah, blah, blah. Why don't we have sex? So it's like this older couple, and you think they're gonna have, like, straight sex. But it turns into this bondage thing, and that's how the book ends. It's like she brings out the whips and the chains, and that's a deviant behavior, according to, like, you do the sociology thing. And so, yeah, that was another ironic situation. Highly recommend it. This book was not available on previews. The one thing that's nice about Charlton is there's this Facebook group, and I highly recommend it if you're interested. It's called the Charlton Arrow, and it's about lovers of the Charlton Company. You might know Charlton from Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, all the characters that were the Watchmen were based on. They were called the Action Heroes. Well, Charlton had a lot of comics and horror. They had a lot of Western comics. They were around a lot longer. And Charlton is so fucking interesting. These guys fucking met in prison. And then they came out of prison and they formed Charlton. So there's a lot of history about Charlton that's just fascinating. But Charlton Arrow is existing, but it's not existing as a publication that you can get through previews. You usually have to get the issues at cons and stuff. But they have been selling the stuff on Amazon. The guy who owns like the Charlton or property, the Charlton Arrow stuff, is Mort Todd. So I think if you go to like morttodd.com, you'll see links, and then if you'll see links to Amazon where they sell these books. And I think they're coming. Paul Cooperberg is coming out with a volume two of this romance stuff, and I'm gonna be all over it. There's still I have all three issues of the Charlton Arrow, which is a weird thing because they're using Charlton characters like Peacemaker and Blue Beetle and stuff, and they're masking it. And then there's a little blurb on the book is like, these characters are owned by DC Comics, but we're only telling these stories for non-profit and for historical reasons. So I don't know what kind of funkiness is going on there, but it's pretty awesome. So that was a 5 out of 5 book. I loved it. All these books that are 5 out of 5, I love for various reasons. They're so different. Ninjak number 5, we already talked about. That was the downfall of canon, and I just love the art. I love the story. I love Ninjak, and it was another Matt Kent book, which I just absorb and absorb. And it had a lot of Roku at the beginning, and I love that character. So Ninjak has pretty much been hitting the 5 out of 5s almost monthly. So I've already talked about that. It's from Valiant Comics. The next one that's 5 out of 5 is an Image comic that was Top Cow originally. It was one of those vote for your favorite pilot season book and we'll give it. Well, it is called The Beauty from Jeremy Hahn. And I think this one is the remastered version of a book I didn't read from Top Cow. But this time it didn't come on Top Cow. It's Jeremy Hahn producing the book under the Image banner. And he revitalized it, I guess, because this was like, 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and he made it current. And it's really cool. It's about a venereal disease that you get that it seems like there's no ramifications that are bad, other than you might get some headaches or something like that. But you will turn beautiful. You will get younger. Your wrinkle spots will go away. You'll turn sexy. You'll become beautiful. So, what's the downside of this venereal disease? Is well, there's a detective agency in the police force that is actually tracking this disease called the Beauty. And they think something's going on with it because they're called to a scene, and it's with this beautiful female who's on the subway who pretty much spontaneously combusts. So, they don't think it's related to the Beauty, but they're trying to figure out why this happened and what's going on. But then the CDC gets involved, and they won't tell these detectives anything. And the detectives are really interesting. It looks like it's one of the detectives is an older cop, one is a younger woman, and she's beautiful. And you learn that she was infected. So this other cop has it, and she's really worried that this venereal disease is doing something to her. She doesn't quite know about what it is yet, but she's really worried when the CDC comes involved. And she even goes to the bathroom and throws up because she's like, I didn't ask for this disease. I never wanted it. I didn't ask to be beautiful, whatever. And then the irony of the situation is the older cop gets home one day and has sex with his wife. And his wife looks hot. And you begin to wonder, was his wife infected? What's going on? And then there's a cliffhanger at the end. And I'm not going to tell you, but you can kind of guess. But I highly recommend The Beauty from Image Comics. Jeremy Hahn, he's been on DC Noise like two times, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And he's been really, really nice to me as a person, both online and in person. He knows me by name. He'll say, like, hey, Mike, how are you doing? He gave me a beauty condom last time I saw him. So, yeah, I might be a little biased, but I'll tell you right now, I really fucking enjoyed this story. I really did. The art is awesome. All the variant covers are really great. Highly recommend it. Check it out. You could get it digitally or on paper. And I think it had second print just come out because the first one sold through. And the last 5 out of 5 is Book of Death, Fallen Injack. Why is this a 5 out of 5 for me? Well, it's Matt Kent. But I think to get the whole part of why it's a 5 out of 5, you have to be ingrained in the Valiant universe, or at least understand the Valiant universe, because this is my top book. And the thing that I really enjoyed about this is this takes place in the future. It was a linear storytelling. Unlike Bloodshot, which went through various years, it was like, here's how he gets from point A in history to way in the future. Well, this is like way in the future, and Ninjak has cancer, and the Earth is decimated from another alien armor war type thing. And Ninjak is in his spiritual protective place, and you learn that he's had cancer, and he has had a relationship with Livewire, and he's basically able to use. So here's where you think, well, maybe this guy's a harbinger, because he could actually use his spiritual yoga stance or whatever you want to call it to fight cancer. He could when he gets into this mode where he's just in peace with himself. He's actually in there concentrating on busting up these cancer cells in his own body. That's fucking awesome. And he only has one good arm that's human. One is, like some other material. And Livewire comes into his castle, and she looks young. So you're like, okay, what's going on there? And is this really Livewire? No, it's not. Harada, I guess Livewire had fallen, and Harada had this thing for Livewire, so he brought her back in spirit, like put her brain or her thoughts inside of this android being, and it has a lot to do with launching Japan into space, which leads into Rai, which is so fucking awesome. So she comes in there, she's gonna fight, and Rai calls upon these Spylocks, who are like a bunch of cool beings that come out. They're like his I can't think of the term. But like if you had a dojo or something like that, and you had all those people underneath you, they come out, all these Spylocks, to help him fight Livewire. And Ninjak says, "Hey, look in the back of you, bitch." And he loves Livewire. He had a relationship, but he knows this is not Livewire. And then the huge android comes out of the water. And Ginger comes out of the water and gets Ninjak, and they're basically going to bring down Japan. She's like, "Oh, fuck, everything I've worked for, you're going to take down Japan." And it really was a fall of Ninjak, because he ends up falling to the earth. So the other thing I absolutely, this is the thing I absolutely love that shot this book into the stratosphere for me, is, the fist in the steel has always been like, a Gallant thing, the eternal warrior. And this hit me emotionally because it's mentioned like three times in the book, the fist in the steel. And the way I'm interpreting it, this might not be what Matt Kent intended, but it's what it means to me is their relationship is so strong, and Gallant has to go on to space, and he's like, "Ninjak, I need you to protect the Earth. You are my brother." And that's what I fucking love about this. It's like, you are my brother. I'm the fist and you're the steel. And I'm like, "Oh, fuck, son of a bitch, that's so fucking awesome." And that just like shot it into the stratosphere. It's fucking weird when you become a comic reader and three, four words put together could hit you on such an emotional level. And it knocked me on my fucking ass. That's what it did. And I absolutely loved it. But that is Mike M's weekly read. And God damn it, I think it's about, God, I've been recording for 1 fucking hour. Son of a bitch. Well, I don't anticipate this to keep going at this length. But I did spoil a lot of stuff. So I will put a disclaimer in the notes. But this was my weekly reads, and I hope you enjoyed this show. Let me know what you think. Did you enjoy this show? Do you want to see more of it? This is like a pilot season to see if people listen to this. If they like it, you can email me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at @MikeMyersBrunch. And on the Facebook pages on the Geek Brunch website, or the DC Noise podcast sites on Facebook. This will be relaunched on the Geek Brunch site, so www.geekbrunchpodcast.com. I hope you enjoyed it. Peace out. Bye.